From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. We'll get you up to date on all of the news that made headlines this week around our region. And today, our panel includes Christina Lord, the editor-in-chief of the Idaho Capital Sun, Caleb Rodell, KUNR's Mountain West News Bureau reporter, and our very own Rachel Cohen, South Central Idaho reporter for Boise State Public Radio News. Hi, everybody.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Hi. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everyone. So, Christine, let's start with you. Last week, right here on our reporter roundtable, we spoke about how some lawmakers want to call a special session. So can you refresh us as to why they want to call the session and where are they in terms of actually being called back into session?
Sure. So last legislative session in 2023, the Idaho legislature talked about a bill and passed a bill that would consolidate primary elections in Idaho in May. Traditionally, our presidential primary election has taken place in March. And so the idea was to consolidate the election, save taxpayers about $2.7 million by consolidating these elections. However, as that bill made its way through the process, lawmakers realized that the bill didn't actually move the election to May, it eliminated it completely. And so there was some legislative work to try to get another bill known as a trailer bill to fix this problem. But ultimately, the legislature adjourned in April without having finding a solution to this issue. So the Republican Party has at its summer meeting decided to hold a caucus instead. But there are a lot of people that have concerns about the caucus process and how many people are actually able to participate. And we got the statistics and the records from the Idaho Secretary of State's office that show the last time that the Republican Party held a presidential caucus was in 2012, and about 44,000 people participated. But when they moved to the next presidential election, the presidential primary in 2016, the numbers of voters who participated increased to almost 225,000 voters. And so people in the party, in both parties, really have major concerns about disenfranchising Idaho voters in this presidential election. So on Wednesday, the Idaho Senate announced that they they've reached the 60% threshold through a petition that would allow themselves to call themselves back into a special legislative session and address a bill that would fix this problem. However, it still needs a 60% threshold from the Idaho House of Representatives to actually call the special session, and we haven't gotten there yet. We talked to the Speaker of the House, Mike Moyle, who said, you know, the House is essentially divided into three groups. There's one group that prefers the March primary because there are folks, leaders within the Idaho Republican Party, including the chairwoman, Dorothy Moon, who are advocating for this March primary because it allows Idaho voters to be more in the mix for who decides the president, basically. And if the election is held in May, Idaho kind of misses the boat there. So there are folks that want to do it in May. There are folks that want to do it in March. And then there are also people who said, you know, we've already decided that we're holding this caucus. Like, why don't we just go with our plan that we decided at the summer meeting? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so as of right now, then, where are they in terms of potentially going back?
That's a really good question. So they have to have this in place, a decision in place by October 1st to meet the requirements of the National Republican Party. It's interesting because if they do get the threshold, they can call a session within 15 days or they're required to call a session within 15 days. So it's still very much up in the air, depending on what the House wants to do and if they can reach that threshold on deciding to come back.
So that's what we're waiting for then, is to see what will happen in that regard.
Right. And there's also, it's an interesting timing because this weekend is actually the Governor's Cup, which is where, you know, anyone who's anyone in Idaho politics or business or movers and shakers, lobbyists, they all gather in Sun Valley and have this event to award scholarships. But it's really a place where people can get together and talk. And so we're interested to see if there's any people that decide to sign on to this petition after all being together essentially in Sun Valley. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we will, as you said, we will see what happens. So Caleb, you recently reported on how farmers here in the West are dealing with some really big stressors, things like wildfires, even their workload, but talk to us about how this is actually impacting their mental health.
Yeah. Thanks for that question. So I spent a day with a farmer in Northern Nevada who mainly grows fruits and vegetables. So like kale, peppers, carrots, melons, the whole nine. And he's 40 and has wife and two kids, and they live off the farm. Essentially, they eat what they grow and all of their income comes from selling their produce. And he spoke to me very candidly about the stress and anxiety and mental health issues him and his family are facing because of the, like you mentioned, wildfires that are growing more frequent and intense in this region. He mentioned a few years ago, they had a fire that chewed onto their property and they had to evacuate, and they've dealt with wildfire smoke, basically choking the growth of some of their crops. One year they lost an entire field of onions, which he says was like a $30,000 loss, 10% of their gross annual income. And he said, that's one of the many issues that affects his mental health. And it kind of wrapped it around a study led by professors at the University of Nevada, Reno, who cited other top stressors being production costs, work-life balance, drought, even family issues, because farmers, a lot of times they're doing business with their family and that can get a little, sticky and add even more stress to the situation. So the authors surveyed farmers across most Western states. Idaho was included in that. And they found that 27% of farmers suffer from moderate to severe depression. And the national average to compare it is only 8%. And the study author I interviewed said the suicide rate among farmers and ranchers is 6 times higher than the general population. So it's a big issue that doesn't get talked about a lot. And this study is trying to shine a bigger spotlight on it. And it's part of a larger effort by the USDA to support Western farmers and ranchers. And one of the study's goals was to find out what farmers and ranchers need, what would help. And in general, they found that they want more access to online and printed resources and materials about mental health education and other things that tie into that, like drug and alcohol cessation, financial planning. Mm-hmm. So the story was kind of focusing on what's being done locally, federally, and at different state levels to try to help these farmers who are experiencing a lot of financial pain, and that's leading to a lot of stressors for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Rachel, let me bring you into the conversation. You recently reported on Idaho Power. Talk to us about how they want to change how they pay for sending excess solar back onto the grid.
Yeah, this is a conversation that has really been like 5 years in the making. And if you have heard of something called net metering, this is what we're talking about. It's essentially how Idaho Power pays for distributed energy that customers produce. That includes solar panels on roofs and small battery storage units. And the reason why this topic came up about 5 years ago is that on a large scale, there's just a lot more people producing energy in this way now compared to 2 decades ago, which is kind of when the system was initially set up. And so over the past few years, Idaho Power has said that this growth has meant that it's time for them to come up with a better price for essentially how they value the solar energy that that people are producing on their own. You know, they've argued that that people who participate in this net metering system, that they're kind of getting benefits at the expense of customers who don't do this. And so they think a new rate is necessary to be fair for all customers. And where we're at now in this process is that last year, the Idaho Public Utilities Commission, they accepted a study or a framework for Idaho Power to essentially rework this system. And this spring, Idaho Power proposed new rates and like a new way that it would compensate people for the energy that they produce. And this fall is kind of when all those details are going to be, you know, finalized and worked out, and the new system could actually be in place early next year. So, you know, we could be kind of nearing the end of this really 5-year back and forth about net metering and about residential solar.
Okay. Caleb, there's some new research out that shows some parts of our region are experiencing what's being called extreme water stress every single year. What is this?
Yeah. So water stress is when 80% of the available supply is being used each year. And our region has several basin areas that experience extreme water stress each year, believe it or not. And examples of that include the Colorado River Basin and Great Basin in parts of Nevada and Utah, the Rio Grande Basin in Colorado and New Mexico, the Columbia Basin in Idaho, and also areas of both the South Fork and Lower Boise Rivers. So this study came out, and essentially big picture shows that 1/4 of the world's population experiences extremely high water stress, and that's 25 countries. Now, the U.S. as a whole doesn't meet that threshold to be considered a country with high water stress, but if you just looked at the Colorado River Basin as a country, in that case, it would rank as one of the most water-stressed countries in the world. And this is research by the World Resources Institute. And in my reporting, I spoke with a hydrologist at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, and she said that water shortages in these basins in our region and other water-stressed regions could grow even more intense with climate change. So she was calling on for more investments to reuse water, like recycling wastewater into drinking water, which is something that's being done here in Reno, and also to store more water underground, because the amount stored by dams each year is pretty unreliable because of the effects of climate change. And the research also found that currently about 50% of the world's population, that would be about 4 billion people, are exposed to water stress for at least 1 month of the year. And they said by 2050, that number could jump another 10% to 60%. And the study didn't actually look at groundwater, but coincidentally, the New York Times just put out a big investigation piece showing that groundwater levels across the country are also decreasing at alarming levels. So it's not only the surface water that's drying up, it's also the water underneath us that we don't see.
And Gemma, just to,
you
know, building off of what Caleb has been reporting on, and to localize this a little bit in Idaho, you know, this summer, something that has been discussed is the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer, which is the largest aquifer in Idaho. And after several years of storing more water underground in the aquifer, like Caleb mentioned, the groundwater levels are actually still on the decline, or lower, just as low as they were when that program began. And so that is this is a current concern right now in Idaho. You know, it's like the New York Times report showing groundwater declining, you know, in states of, across the country. Just it is a concern here as well.
Well, I appreciate that update about how that impacts, you know, the entire region, in particular Idaho as well. Christine, talk to us about the Idaho Department of Labor's survey, this new survey. This is they talked to employers about their needs when it comes to our state. And what did they find out?
Yeah, so this is the first time that the Idaho Department of Labor has conducted this. They call it the Idaho Employer Business Climate Survey for 2013. The survey was meant to measure top concerns for Idaho businesses and employers to get a better sense of demographics, like how many Idahoans are working remotely after the pandemic, and then what they kind of anticipate for future growth and expectations among employers. So the survey was distributed via email to 90,000 email addresses that have been pooled by the Department of Labor with a 2-week period to collect responses. And they collected quite a few, about 2,300 responses, with 95% of those folks were representing private business. But what the survey found was that turnover among their employees is a top concern for people who own businesses. Most of the folks who are leaving jobs in Idaho, the survey found, are leaving on their own accord. So there's this turnover, high labor turnover that people that employee workers are experiencing. So 31% of those surveyed said the supply or cost of workers is their top concern. 22% said high labor turnover is their top concern. About 16% said that they're really concerned about economic uncertainty. And then 9% were worried about taxes, regulations, and other public policies that affected their business. But about 44% of respondents said job switching, like someone, an employee that is leaving to take a different job, is the main reason for labor turnover. So I really learned a lot by reading the results of the survey, and it helped me see kind of what's going on out there in the business climate. I was interested to see that only 12% of Idahoans are working remotely. That felt low to me, but just really interesting to get a baseline of how employers are feeling about the economy and about how they're facing some of these labor market issues that we've all been reporting on for the last few years.
Yeah. So, Rachel, explain to us about our state's energy efficiency regulations. I'm talking in terms of building codes because they could be changing soon.
Yeah, this is another process that's been going on for kind of a while that is also another wonky thing that I reported on this week. So building codes for energy efficiency codes within building codes, you know, that touches on lighting rules, mechanical, electrical, plumbing codes that, you know, all have something to do with energy efficiency. They're in the larger building codes. Over the past few years, the state legislature has kind of been intent on changing these and, you know, kind of lowering the requirements in some cases. The argument from lawmakers and from, you know, lobbyists for the building industry has been that the rules have been uneven across the state, which makes it hard for builders and contractors to kind of keep track of, you know, county to county when they're working frequently across county lines, and that even when those rules are in place, that they're hard to actually certify whether they're really happening, because rural communities especially are lacking in kind of code enforcers. And so where we're at now is that the Building Code Board has kind of been going through the process of cutting regulations according to Governor Little's executive order to cut red tape in state regulations. And so last year, the board proposed really big cuts to the Energy Conservation Code. There was a lot of pushback, including from cities, from companies like Idaho Power, and from members of the public. And so the board did not end up adopting those big cuts last year, but this year is revisiting the changes. And what I've gotten the sense from people I've spoken with is that the changes are a lot less significant than what was proposed last year. It's not entirely clear what sort of impact they'll have collectively, but you know, this is just this kind of rule rewriting process, which will go in front of the legislature next session, is kind of one piece of several different efforts to kind of bring energy efficiency codes for buildings on the same level, and in some cases, depending on the lawmaker, you know, to weaken them. And you know, this is, it's kind of timely because buildings and the role that they play in carbon emissions and you know, greenhouse gas emissions have been getting a lot of attention, and there's a lot of federal funding on the table, and you know, states across the country, neighboring states like Washington, are taking a lot of measures to reduce the amount of emissions that come from buildings, because they do contribute a sizable portion. And so that's kind of the backdrop to these discussions. You know, this, so, you know, unlike the net metering rules, which might be kind of like put to rest a little bit by the end of this year, the energy conservation codes for buildings, I think this is something that lawmakers are going to continue to discuss next session.
Yeah, I would think so. Christine, I only have about 3 minutes left, but I really do want to talk a little bit about the Biden administration and their Save Loan Repayment Program and how it's impacting Idahoans. Can you talk to us a little bit about this?
Sure. So, you know, I think we've talked quite a bit about the Biden administration's attempts to make it so that student loan borrowers are getting help repaying their loans. And obviously the U.S. Supreme Court summer decision to strike down this one-time debt relief program that a lot of us have written quite a bit about, that attempt failed. And so essentially the Biden administration, through the U.S. Department of Education, has started what's known as the Saving on a Valuable Education, or SAVE plan, for some borrowers that could result in essentially no monthly payments or greatly reduced monthly payments on their student loans. The repayment plan essentially calculates payments based on a borrower's income and family size. It forgives balances after a certain number of years. And the department has estimated that most borrowers will save about $1,000 per year under the new plan. There are 25, they just released some new statistics about statewide statistics about how many folks that have signed up for this. And in Idaho, about 25,000 student loan borrowers have signed up for this sort of relief. And I think it'll help people in a lot of ways. I just think that there are certain generations out there that are really, really struggling with student loans, and it's affecting all sorts of aspects of the economy, including home ownership and some of these other things that we've talked at length about. But the pause on federal student loans that has been in place during the COVID pandemic that the Trump administration administered is set to end in October. So this is really the time, if you have student loans, to figure out if you might qualify for the SAVE plan and start going through that process through the Department of Education. You can get more information on the Department of Education's, the U.S. Department of Education's website.
Well, thanks for that update. And I want to thank all of you for taking time out of your busy Friday to talk with us today. Our panelists today are Christine Lourdes with the Idaho Capital Sun, Caleb Rodell with KUNR, and Rachel Cohen with Boise State Public Radio News. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.